Welcome to the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast, where educators go to find inspiration and learn world-class strategies from top leaders across the globe. Better Leaders, Better Schools was created by Danny Sunshine Bauer.
This is episode number 131 with Winston Sakurai. Hi there, my name is Danny Sunshine Bauer. I'm a former classroom teacher and school administrator turned life and leadership coach. I'm also the host of this podcast where each week I share my conversation with top leaders across the globe to help you accelerate your leadership development. In today's show with Winston Sakurai, we explore a number of interesting topics like students know quality educators when they see it, that leadership is about caring, to give opportunity when opportunity isn't there, and be generous with your wisdom, support, and time. Thanks for spending some time with me listening to this podcast. I hope you enjoy the show. But before we jump into the episode, I would like to take some time to thank our show sponsors. I'd like to share an amazing free resource for all listeners of the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast. It's the Top 10 School Fundraising Ideas for 2017. And that's available at schoolzonepodcast.com. And just like the title says, you get the Top 10 School Fundraising Ideas for 2017 at schoolzonepodcast.com. Well, hey there, Better Leaders. I hope you are ready for an action-packed, value-packed podcast episode today. I am joined by Winston Sakurai. He has distinguished himself as an innovative educational leader at the state and national level for over 25 years. He was recently named by the National Association of Secondary School Principals as a 2016 National Digital Principal of the Year and by the Hawaii Association of Secondary School Administrators as the 2016 Hawaii State Principal of the Year. He currently moderates a national education chat for school leaders, Principal Leader Chat, that's Prin Leader Chat on Twitter. And Sakurai believes that empathy, empowerment, and a positive environment are keys to unleashing innovative ideas to help students and teachers be successful. Listeners, I have a longer bio for you. It'll be available for you in the show notes. But Winston, thank you so much for joining me on the show today.
Aloha, Danny. Thanks. Thanks for having me.
Can I also say mahalo? Is that also a way to say hello and welcome?
Mahalo is thank you, and we appreciate people saying the language and everything. So yeah, go ahead. Use the words. Aloha, mahalo. It's great to be here today.
Man, I am so excited. I met you at the National Principals Conference in Philly and was blown away. And, I just said to myself, man, I got to get this guy on the show. And here you are. So, Winston, thanks again. Start from the beginning. What inspired you to pursue a career in education?
Yeah, it's a very interesting story. I came into education wanting to make a difference, in education, wanting to make a difference in the world. I grew up, I had great teachers in elementary school and always knew that there are veteran teachers who are caring, loving, really knew their craft. But the issue was kind of the school leadership. I had six different principals in 7 years of elementary school. And when I got up to intermediate school, I had three different principals over 2 years. It was kind of nerve-wracking, especially as a young child going through school, knowing that these teachers were working really hard, and yet the school was a good school, but it wasn't going to be a great school unless a leader stayed. So I actually got involved in student government my fourth grade year to try to make a difference, to say, look, we've had all these different principals, and it's hard. It's hard on the students because you go through a different routine. There's different leadership styles. The rules change from year to year. So I remember third grade, I got in trouble for something that was perfectly acceptable to do the year before, just because the principal had made a change to the recess rules. Yeah. So I got involved, and I won't take any credit for this, but my fifth grade year, the principal that came in stayed all the way for 22 years, changed the school into a blue ribbon school, actually won blue ribbon school twice. And I saw the longevity that could take place by having a good principal at the school. So you could kind of say that I wanted to be a school leader, maybe even from the third grade. And that was a real big part of me getting into education. My route was a little different. I got involved in student government, which allowed me to testify at different board meetings, district school advisory council meetings. I was a student representative to the State Board of Education my senior year of high school, which allowed me to see all the different workings of what was going on. We're going through Goals 2000 and being part of the panel, being actually part of the educator competency panel for the state. And so it really kind of opened my eyes to, you know, maybe this is something I could do. At these board meetings, the difficult part was you go through these 4 or 5 hour board meetings, and sometimes the board members would be kind of snoozing off.
Oh, boy.
They were disconnected from what was going on at the schools. I thought that there was a lot of things that I could do. So it became a goal of mine to become a Board of Education member. And when I was 20, there was an opening. There was a board member who had passed away, and the board chair actually called me and said, "Winston, there's an opening. Let me talk to the governor. Maybe he can appoint you to the board." And actually, that's what happened. So here I am, a college sophomore, getting called from the governor's office. The governor wants to talk to you today. Can you come down? And I was like, I got a summer school class, but I can meet with the governor.
Yeah.
No problem.
Right.
No problem at all.
I'll clear my schedule.
I'll clear everything from that. I was actually in the student government office and took the call. So I actually had to, here's another funny thing. I didn't have a driver's license because I would just catch a bus back and forth to college. I was staying with my grandparents' house. So I actually had to catch the bus home, change into a nice shirt, and then catch the bus down to the governor's office, all within like an hour and a half. So I met with the governor. He sat down with me, asked me a bunch of tough questions. And at the end of the session, he goes, "Winston, you know, I have one question for you. And it's, can you make the tough decisions?" And it was kind of one of those things where I didn't know how to answer, but I answered it the way that we had always been taught in student government. You know, "Governor, I represent the people. I'm going to do my best to think of their interests. I might not always be correct, but at least I know that if I get enough information, talk to people, get their support, we'll make the best decision that we can." And so he goes, "Yeah, when I was your age, I could have probably done the same thing. So wait right here." Called the press guys. They got me set for the media, and he appointed me. And wow. That started a 10-year journey on the Board of Education.
10 years. Starting at age 20.
At age 20, college student, I actually got in. And the nice thing was that there were a lot of people that knew me when I was a student. And so they were very open to helping me. Not everybody. There was a lot of even editorials in the newspaper saying, you know, "Can't there be someone better than a 20-year-old student to be appointed to the Board of Education?" So there was some criticism even from the very beginning. And it was one of those things that I purposed really and said, "I'm going to do my best. I'm going to prove maybe some of the naysayers wrong. And I'm going to try and do things the right way." And so it started off, my second year, the Board of Education didn't have a budget committee. So I helped to create a budget committee on the board and became the first chair of the budget committee. So here, a 21-year-old now, second year on the board, controlling a statewide budget of $1.8 billion. Okay, so
yeah,
that sounds really strange, but I had the backing of the board. I had the backing of a lot of people. I had developed kind of a reputation of being even keeled, and that's really what I wanted to do. I would arrive early to board meetings, study a lot of what was going on. I'd stay late, and this is like 1, 2 o'clock in the morning, and try my best to kind of just say, you know, I got this handicap of being a younger guy, so I need to work harder than everyone else to make sure that, you know, we did things right for students in the state of Hawaii. So it was kind of eye-opening. I would go to these board meetings, and there'd be very difficult issues we'd be dealing with. And my comfort zone was always going to the back of the room or in the next room from the board office, and where all the principals were there and saying, "Hey, can you help me out here? What should we do as a board? And every single principal that I met was always supportive. They helped me through it. They sometimes scolded me if I did something that was not the best thing.
Sure.
But there was a relationship. There was a relationship with these veteran principals. You know, when you combine it, hundreds of years of experience being educators, and I learned from the best in the state of Hawaii, and it was a real blessing to me just to be able to talk with them, learn from them, understand the system of what goes into being a school system that does really well. I had the best training, I thought, just being a Board of Education member, and it was probably one of the best times of my life.
Yeah, I can't imagine cutting your teeth as a young educator on the board as a 20-year-old. This is one of the blessings of doing this podcast is, you know, you throw out that question, and I am genuinely interested in everybody's history, how they got started in education, and the variety, the diversity of answers that you get. You know, what I love about your story specifically is from such an early age, third or fourth grade, you're already starting to almost like define a vision for yourself, for your life, or at least you know that a school needs a leader that sticks put, that will pour into and develop himself or herself alongside partnering with the community. And you notice that third or fourth grade. In third grade, Winston, I was interested in dinosaurs. That's it. Okay. Like literally, no, I can remember that in Mrs. B's room, you know, and you're a kid too, but you also had a pretty profound observation there. And then by the time that you're 20, here you are again, appointed by the governor to the Board of Education. Like that is absolutely phenomenal and so interesting. I'm curious, you know, can you think back to like one of the most important leadership lessons you learned during that time?
Yeah, you know, I'm a big believer that students know good teachers when they see it. They know good principals when they see it, because leadership is about caring. It really is about caring about what you do, being passionate about what you do. And I saw teachers who were very caring. That's probably the best example of leadership. You know, teachers who care, they lead their classroom very well. Principals who care, they lead their schools really well, and they put forth the time and effort and make that commitment to be at a school. So one of my earliest lessons was just, you know, just seeing how much and deeply educators cared for their craft, cared for us as students. And I think students all across the world, they'll see that. If they don't understand it totally, they can sense it. They can feel it. And so, you know, being a leader now at a school, I try to make sure that the students know that we love them, that we care about them. We want the best for them. We're trying our best to help them be successful. All those things, I think, go into making a good leader at a school. And I saw that. I saw that coming out through different avenues. So when I got to high school, my principal had been there for, you know, over 20 years. And he was, you know, he was kind of a gruff guy, one of those people that, you know, you kind of be afraid to walk into the principal's office, but he did care. And he gave me, even as a student, opportunities to be part of the school improvement process. He put me on a committee for accreditation. He put me on a committee for our Blue Ribbon School application. It was opportunities like that that were so invaluable to see, you know, people who cared about what they were doing. They wanted the best for everybody. That kind of stuck with me. It shows that leaders have to be people who really care for others. And I think those are the best type of leaders that we can have in our schools.
Yeah, I liked it a lot. And I appreciate you picking apart a bit what your former principal did for you and appointing you to committees, that kind of thing. I don't know about you, but I had enough on my plate just thinking about how to operate a building and how to develop my people. That was enough. And that doesn't even include parents. That doesn't even include student issues. And it definitely doesn't include where am I going to find the funding to run all the great programs my students deserve. Well, the great news is I have an amazing free resource for you, the Top 10 School Fundraising Ideas for 2017. That's available at schoolzonepodcast.com. In this guide, you will be exposed to the best fundraising ideas for schools in 2017. And my favorite company that's described in the guide is School Spirit Vending. The reason School Spirit Vending rises above the rest is because they make fundraising so incredibly hassle-free. What if a company would come in, install vending machines with customized stickers? That's right, stickers that had your logo, that had your mascot, that had whatever you and your students wanted installed. They come in, they take care of the machines. You do no work besides having the machines installed in the school, and you get a cut of the profit. That's where you're going to find money to actually run these programs. So check out the top 10 school fundraising ideas for 2017 at schoolzonepodcast.com and definitely give School Spirit Vending a call. Tell them Danny Sunshine sent you. Let's move from my idea to, like, I guess, actual tactics that listeners can put into place tomorrow. What are some of the ways, Winston, that you show students that you love them, that you care about them at your campus?
Well, I hope I do a good job with that. A lot of times it's just having conversations with them on the sidewalk, talking to them about what they might think can make the school better, asking them about their families, asking them about the things that they're interested in. I really believe in student empowerment and making sure that students are really involved in creating a culture at the school that they want to come to school. I think students can be a big part and a big help to principals and teachers if they take ownership of their schools and say, hey, we're going to make this the best school because this is our school. And so giving them opportunities, whether that's through student government or through clubs or through National Honor Society, making them a part of the school improvement process by just giving them questions to try to tackle and try to help with, setting goals that are aligned with what you're trying to do at school, not excluding them from even some of the meetings that might be important to have some of your fellow, teacher leaders invite students to these meetings, have them be engaged. It should be transparent what you're trying to do as a school, and students can be the best allies at a school to help you make the school a better place. They outnumber us at the school, so not utilize their brain power and have them be a part of, the great things that you're planning as a school leader. Engage them in conversations that are meaningful for them. The second purpose of that is that as they get better with that, they might become school leaders in the future. I got involved in school leadership because I had a principal that involved me in the process. Who knows? They might be your boss in a few years. I actually remember my high school principal, when I went back for my sister's graduation, he mentioned in his speech that one of his former students was now his boss in just 2 years after graduation. And I was shocked that he would even say or even acknowledge something like that in front of, hundreds of people who are at this graduation. And it kind of struck me that leadership is fluid. The students that are sitting in your classroom right now, teachers and principals, they could be someone that is of influence in just a few years after they leave your school and be over you in terms of, maybe supervision, or they could be a board member as well. Who knows? And having that reality, you treat them a little differently. You would treat them like a colleague in a sense. Not that they're of age to be so, but having them just have ideas to be shared, to implement, help you through the process, I think can be very valuable. And I don't discount any student if they have an idea or if they have a suggestion, because they're probably thinking about it. And if they're willing to come and talk to you and share those kind of things with you,
it matters.
It matters. There you go.
Well, here's the thing. I mean, that's their day-to-day experience. They're living it. And I love, again, just talking about this leader who is humble enough to talk about a former student that is now supervising in a supervisory role over him. But you know what you're saying to me is really firing me up, because I was thinking in tandem as you were speaking, like you have these companies like Google that seem really cool and fun to work at, right? Or, you know, you may have read about Zappos and their culture and delivering happiness. And it's just, it's a fun place to work. And people like move their families. They do anything for these jobs, right? Well, why do we have any type of educator shortage or leadership, you know, gap within education when we have such an advantage to develop the best people to come back and serve the schools and the districts, right? We work with them every freaking day. And it's almost saying something about our school experience in our districts when we have that shortage. Because if we created a place where kids were so freaking excited to go to, and they were given opportunities like you do to solve interesting problems, to speak into their day-to-day experience within the school, why wouldn't they want to come back as an educator and as a future leader? And so I think there's some profound stuff that you were bringing up there through that story.
Yeah, you know, the nice thing is that at our school, there's actually some alumni who have come back, and I actually taught them when they were 7th, 8th grade. And I kind of wonder, you know, is it something that I did, you know, as a teacher, or did I do anything bad as a teacher that I need to ask forgiveness from them for? Yeah. Because I probably made a lot of mistakes when I was a teacher or when I was a young administrator. And so I'm always curious to see what their experience was. Did I treat them well? Did I do things that maybe influenced them positively or negatively? So I have these conversations with them just to make sure that I can improve as a leader. I can improve as an educator. And they tell me stories. They tell me stories of, yeah, you remember this time when you're in class and you were doing this, and there were some mistakes made on my part that they share. It's a very humbling experience, but it's a needed experience to go through because they're watching. Students watch every single day. As a leader, one of the greatest things you can do is create other leaders. I'm always trying to give an opportunity when the opportunity isn't there. That's, in a sense, social justice is giving those who are not able to do things and in a sense, students are not able to do everything and give them opportunities to do things that are adult-like. There are many students in our schools that are very capable of taking on adult-like situations, and providing the opportunity really gives, really empowers them to do great things. And I really hope that we are, you know, developing and empowering students now to do great things as educators in their schools in 5 to 10 years. They are going to be our future teachers. They're going to be our future principals. They're going to be our future board members, future legislators, and they will have great opportunities that we haven't even had to do things in our nation that really can change the direction of where we're going and improve life for everybody across the land.
Yeah, so I think we've touched on pretty well caring for students and student empowerment, giving them opportunities to lead and solve problems. You've mentioned social justice as well. Is there anything you want to touch on there? Maybe specifically what that looks like at your school or just even personal ideas around social justice. How could we integrate that more as a school leader if we're interested in doing so?
Yeah, you know, I try to make sure I'm watching how things are going, at school and seeing those who might have an inkling to want to step up and do things. And this is teachers, these are students, giving opportunities to girls and women, leadership opportunity to them that might not come as something that just because of their gender, people might hold them back from, but giving those who are well capable of doing things and giving them opportunity to lead and shine at school is very important. So I try to find places or roles or different opportunities within the school. Our student body president is a female, and it's kind of neat because when I hear her talk, I'm just blown away by just how comfortable she is in understanding what her role is as our student body president. And she doesn't mess around. She will take charge. She will do things. And sometimes I see the boys just like, wow, you know, how is she doing this? And it's a reminder for me to say, you know what, let's support her as much as possible. Let's support, you know, the other women leaders at our school. And I think that's important because there needs to be someone that advocates for women, and the males have to step up and do that. I'd like to see a lot more women leaders kind of be part of education reform and doing a lot of things. Women in STEM is very important to me, and giving an opportunity to girls to go into fields that traditionally have not been open to them or have not been encouraged to go into. And I'm very aware of that and conscious of that. We're a school that there are a lot of minorities at our school. Hawaii is very diverse and very, very much a place where, you know, we get along as a culture. And yet sometimes I know when they go to the mainland or they go to other places, they don't have those same opportunities. And preparing them to be advocates for themselves, to say, you know what, I'm going to make a difference in the world, and nothing's going to stop me, not my race, not my gender. Go out there and do your best to be helpful to others. And yet at the same time, don't let anyone hold you back from doing great things.
So we've talked about a lot of great things, including great things that you have accomplished. But I love to ask this question. Winston, what has been your worst leadership mistake and what did you learn from it?
Yes. I relive this moment almost yearly. It's something that I think about every single time when I need to refocus on who I am as a leader. When I was a board member, so this goes back to when I was a board member, there was a superintendent that board members weren't happy with, in a sense. You know, regardless of the situation, I felt as a board member, as a leader, someone who was an officer of the board at the time, I needed to do something about that. I had been responsible as the swing vote. It was a 7-6 vote to get the person in. And now we're towards the end of his contract. And I went to the press and expressed my concerns to the press. And the next day, I get a call from a lot of the assistant superintendents saying, Winston, we got to talk. And they firmly sat me down and says, Winston, you just don't do those things. You can't go to the press and lay out all of this rubbish, in a sense, of the superintendent. And I never thought of it that way. I thought leadership was about, you know what, taking charge, doing something. I must have been 25 at this time. And here I am talking in front of, you know, the media about, you know, a superintendent that wasn't doing his job. We need to fix these things. We have to make sure that, you know, things are going on at the school level that needs to be going on. And here I was hurting our system because people were insecure now about the leadership of the schools. And it hurts to this day. This superintendent, I actually knew his daughter from high school. We were friends. And I caused pain to him and his family. And I didn't think about it at the time. And it wasn't like it was that bad. I think we just had disagreements. We're trying to motivate him to do better, in a sense. And I went about the wrong approach. And now when I look at things, I always treat things very seriously as a personal matter, as a personal matter, in making sure that I don't do things that hurt people in ways that are unnecessary, like going to the press at that time. And so it was a very difficult life lesson for me because I had done something very destructive in my position. It was one of those things where I thought I was doing the right thing as a leader, and I totally wasn't. Leadership is difficult because you want things to be done right, but you can't discuss that outside of, you know, outside in a public venue. Things have to be kept private, in a sense. So I'd like to, at this point, you know, very much, you know, applaud people, congratulate people, celebrate people in public. But when it comes to maybe changing some things or correcting things, all those things have to be done in private. Even if the person doesn't want to change, or maybe they might go public with certain things, I have to keep those things private. And so a very, very important lesson, very, very much a hurtful lesson on my part. And I regret that. I regret that to this day. And it was one of my biggest failures as a leader. And I am never going to repeat that again.
Well, I appreciate you being courageous, you know, to share it. It's definitely a sobering lesson to learn at the young age of 25. But the listeners, you know, I hope you caught that, what Winston shared. There's so much wisdom there. In public, as much as possible, celebrate your people and talk about how incredible they are. And it's in private where you have to take the correction when it's needed, because it will be needed. And Winston learned that lesson, and it served him well through his career. But that's why we make mistakes. We learn from them. Go ahead.
Yeah, and it's one of those things where I really have to think, you know, would I want to have been in a position myself? How would I want to be treated? So it's kind of the golden rule. You know, you do unto others as you would want to have done to yourself. And I would not have wanted to be humiliated in public like that. But it's one of those things where I have to model that myself. And I didn't at that point. And so, you know, I hope if I mess up royally one day, that it's one of those things that we can talk about together. I can admit my mistakes in public, but not have someone expose that and try to ruin you through the press or through the media. And so it's one of those things where I hope that as we talk about, you know, school leadership, that board members especially, you know, it's hard as politicians, as board members, you want to make sure that you help schools as much as possible and you support that. But oftentimes I know we rip leaders in the news, and I would hope every single board member that, you know, they will listen to your podcast and see how difficult it is to lead. It is very difficult. It's a very lonely position as a leader, as a school leader. And board members could be the best cheerleaders of schools and students. And, you know, one of those things is that there might have to be a culture shift in terms of how board members lead, how legislators lead, to support schools as much as possible, support leaders. And yes, if there are mistakes made, those things have to be corrected. But there's a proper way to do that outside of the public arena that should take place first. And that's something that I didn't do. And I hope that other board members will look at that and say, hey, that might be an approach to make sure our schools get better by doing things in private.
This podcast is a proud member of the Education Podcast Network. Podcasts for educators and podcasts by educators. Listen to all the great education podcasts at edupodcastnetwork.com. That's edupodcastnetwork.com. I love this quote by Derek Sivers. What is ordinary to you is extraordinary to me. Winston, what do you consider your superpower?
I would hope my superpower is generosity. I don't have much to give, but what I do have, I would like to give to other people. So whether that's a little bit of maybe wisdom, a little bit of a support, a little bit of time, even some kind of monetary resources, if it's possible to give to other people, I hope that's my superpower, that people will think I'm a generous person with what I have, and that what I have is shared freely with others. I'm just a normal guy, and that's one of the things that quote is kind of resonates, is that maybe there are things that I do that people really appreciate that I just think is just a normal thing to do. And one of the things I think is normal to do is just be generous with what you have.
Listen, I barely know you. I mean, I met you briefly at the conference, right? And now we're having a chat, and I hope the relationship develops from there. But I've already identified you as a generous person in the brief amount of time that I've met you. And here's how. I remember at the Philly conference, I don't remember 100% what it is you brought, but I think it was with like Glenn Robbins and maybe some other people that you obviously have a deeper relationship with. Maybe it was a shirt from Hawaii or it was something, but I saw that you had brought them something. And it doesn't have to be gold-plated, you know, iPhone X or whatever, right? Like, you know, you don't have to bring a $1,000 gift. It could be something that's, you know, $5 or less, but, you know, even generosity in terms of wisdom, support, and time. people are craving authenticity and deep relationships. And I could see just that moment where you said, here, guys, you know, I care about you. You know, this is just a gift, right? I'm like, wow, this guy's really generous. And I had just met you and I identified that.
And this has been bothering me since you asked me to be on the podcast. I didn't give you anything. It's been torturing me. So when we go to these conferences, yes, Glenn Robbins, Bobby Dodd, they're my friends. We talk almost every day.
Oh wow!
And it's kind of funny. They are probably some of my closest friends right now, and we're miles and miles apart. But you know, being school leaders, you get to commiserate, you get to celebrate together. We talk about our families. We get to share pictures with each other. So I brought them some Aloha shirts from Hawaii because I thought it was one of those things that, you know, would be different that they couldn't get in the East Coast. And I had run out of macadamia nut chocolates. I had brought like 24 boxes of them. And within the first day, I had given them all away and I had run out. So I think that Danny's now asking me to be on his podcast. And I was like, I didn't give him a box of chocolate macadamia nuts or anything. So I felt really bad. And I apologize because next time you are getting one, my friend, because that's one of those things where I think it comes from my parents. Mm. My parents were very generous growing up. My entire family, I think, were always willing to help others out. And, you know, you're growing up as a kid, it's like you're giving that away to somebody, you know, giving up something that we can use as a family. But I always saw them because they always felt that, you know what, you need to because you can't take it with you. And you have to make sure that, you know, the time that you have, you can share with others what you have. And that was a very, you know, that was a very early lesson I learned from my parents. So Japanese culture is omiyage. You bring gifts when you travel. And so we kind of just like to give gifts. And it's funny because, the guys will also bring stuff for me too, to bring home to my family. And so it's become a neat tradition when we get to see each other, which has been very rare, to just exchange gifts and to be generous with one another.
That's a fantastic story though. And I'm so happy to hear, you know, it's connected to something you saw from your family, a family and cultural tradition. Like I said, I noticed it right away. And you know, I appreciate, I'm honored that you're being generous with your wisdom and your time right now. So this is a huge gift. And it's a great gift too, Winston, if you think about it, because this podcast will exist, you know, pretty much forever unless I close the doors. And so this will be giving and giving and giving to school leaders as long as I have better leaders, better schools. So thank you. Really appreciate that.
Well, thank you so much.
I'm curious, do you have any types of morning routines or rituals that help you get going and start a successful day?
I actually don't. I have two young kids, and so our ritual is just trying to get out of the house.
Get out the house, yeah.
School.
No, so that's fine.
I actually have more evening rituals. So a lot of time in the evening is the quiet time to make sure that I catch up with what's going on, you know, at work, make sure I get those last emails out. I actually have a lot of conversations with teachers during the time, you know, on Facebook or Voxer. You know, 10 o'clock at night sometimes is the best time because the kids are asleep, catching up with, you know, people and talking with them. And I have a great staff that, you know, sometimes even 1 o'clock in the morning, they know I'm up and they'll send me over a message and we, it's not about work stuff. It's just about, it might be about fantasy football or it's about, what are you doing this weekend kind of thing. And yeah, I have a great relationship with my staff. So I actually have more evening rituals than morning rituals because it is, like most people, it's hectic getting to school and making sure your children also get to school and they have all their homework signed and everything else that they need to. So there's no really morning ritual other than get out of here as fast as you can, get through the traffic and get on to school.
Winston, can you think of a class that we should have in schools that isn't currently taught that you know of?
You know, I would like to see someone develop a whiz-bang empathy class. And we do things with trying to teach students to be empathetic through different means. But I would like to see if there's a way to just create a class where you teach students or help students to be empathetic, to understand people, to sit down and take the time to just breathe in the soul of another person, understanding where they are, and trying to help them. You know, I don't know if there are classes like that that are just designed for that. I think there are components of that in many different classes or even clubs or activities. But to have someone that really understands the needs of others and then coming up with solutions to try to help, you know, other people to be better will be tremendous. And, you know, we have to care for one another. We're, you know, especially here in Hawaii, we're on this island. It's a small community. People know each other because families, you know, have relationships for generations. We run into each other all the time because it's a small place. We have to be really understanding of, you know, who other people are and to empathize with their needs. You know, there might be a pressing need that someone has that they can't figure out how to resolve. And yet, you know, you come in and you have a friend that you can talk to and go through the process of trying to solve the problem of what can we do to make life better for each and every person on this planet will be tremendous. It would be tremendous. Can you imagine just the cultural shift in our nation when people really took the time to say, you know what, I'm gonna care for one another. I'm gonna not just look out for myself, but look out for others and really empathize with a person's situation. I think our governments would be better. I think our workplaces would be better. And I don't know how to do that, but I would love to see someone try to implement something that would be in our schools that really, really help students to be empathetic.
Such a key trait of amazing leaders too. And you know, you're talking, you were going as big as a society in general that would be more empathetic. Wouldn't that be a wonderful place to live? Here's the thing, like if you can be empathetic as a leader, I mean, you need to be, in my opinion, right? But that's just such a quality that sets you apart from everybody else. Because it goes back, you know, bring this back all the way to the beginning of this podcast, showing students you care about them and that you want what's best. And when I think of people that have had tremendous influence in my life, they had that quality. And then the people that I have been the most frustrated by and have really had trouble connecting with in rocky relationships, one of the reasons why is because they were so cold and mean-spirited at times or just totally didn't understand me, you know? And so empathy is just such an incredible gift a leader can give a community. And the crazy thing is when you do that and when you serve others and really try to understand them, it's almost like they will do anything for you. So instead, you don't have to figure out how do I influence, how do I persuade and do all that stuff. Just care. Just know your people, truly know them, care about them, and they'll do anything for you.
Yeah, those relationships are so important. It's more important than the policies and procedures. Is if you have great relationships at your school, from the students to the parents to community members to the teachers to the custodians, the cafeteria workers.
Yes.
You know, my mom was a cafeteria worker at a high school for over 20 years. And so when I walk into the cafeteria, I think that person that's behind the counter is my mom. That could have been my mom right there.
Yep.
And how I treat them is so important because I would want my mom to be treated the best by the principal because she is my mom. And so making sure that, you know, there's an understanding of you know, there are wives, there are husbands, there are daughters, there are sons working at your school, being part of your school. How would you want to treat family members? In Hawaii, it's we call it ohana. And ohana is very important to us in making sure that everyone is taken care of as a family. Your school family is so important to take care of. And they will take care of you as a leader as well when you need the help. And so we really need to make sure that we look at each other and say, hey, you know, we're all in this together and we have to be helpful to each other.
Conferences, piles of flyers, getting stuck in endless email lists and never-ending calls. There's an easier way to sort through and identify the best school fundraisers. School Spirit Vending proudly presents the top 10 school fundraising ideas of 2017. It's a guide of the top fundraising companies handpicked from the best podcasts. As an added bonus, this guide lists 5 resource companies that would add tremendous value to your community, school, and students. The best part is that School Spirit Vending is giving the guide away completely free. Are you ready to simplify the search? Download the free guide at schoolzonepodcast.com. Winston, what's one book every principal should read right now and why?
You know, that is a great question. I've been reading Grit by Angela Duckworth. Actually, Angela is a hero of my wife. She's actually really big on Grit. And it kind of exposed a different side of what we're trying to teach in schools. You know, we teach the academics, we teach the content, but if we want students to be really successful, we have to do the things that develop their passion and for them to have perseverance over time, which is what Angela Duckworth speaks about. And what caught my eye is not so much the beginning, but some of the later chapters. It talks about how schools can do that. And one of the things is actually she found is that there's a high correlation between co-curricular activities and having these gritty people later on in life. If they're involved in sports, if they're involved in student government or clubs, if they're involved in band, all these activities that are beyond the walls of a classroom at schools are so important. They are part of the educational program. And yet sometimes people think of them as extracurricular. They are co-curricular. They are part of what we do to help train students. And so when I read Grit, it kind of just, it boggled my mind because it's more of a psychological type of book that you would think, you know, how does that affect schools? But when I dug a little bit deeper into it and saw, you know, wow, we invest so much time in terms of the curriculum of the academics. How much time do we invest in terms of the programs that we have that are, you know, after school hours, during school lunches and breaks? And developing those things, because those things will help develop students who will be successful later on in life because of the things that they do to persevere, to develop their passions, to stay in positions long time, and to help develop themselves to be better people, to be continual learners. It kind of fascinated me. And so Grit by Angela Duckworth was one of the books that I would recommend to read it in terms of what can be done to help improve your school program.
Love it. Yeah, we got that linked up for you listeners in the show notes, and it's been mentioned a number of times, twice on the show. So definitely check out Grit by Angela Duckworth. Winston, what do you do for fun?
I spend a lot of time with my children. We just finished the doctorate program, and I've been kind of ignoring them for the last 3.5 years.
Yeah.
It's so bad as a parent. And so I've been trying to spend as much time with them.
Good.
Because they're 5 and 8. And so I missed a little bit of their childhood just by, you know, going to classes and whatnot. So my fun time is with them building Legos, playing dolls with my daughter.
Yes.
It's kind of funny. It's kind of funny that there is so much enjoyment that comes from that, that there's not really this need to do other things. I really don't have any hobbies. I'm not a golfer. I'm not really a sports fan per se, where, you know, in terms of going games, and we don't have any professional sports here in Hawaii as well. So my enjoyment, my leisure time is with the family, and we're having a blast. We're having a blast, and we're looking forward to spending more time with the breaks that are coming up.
If you could be automatically good at something, what would it be?
Oh, I would want to be a good writer. I have not acquired that skill yet, and I would love to have that skill in order to communicate better. I actually am dyslexic, which, you know, is kind of a superpower in itself.
Yeah.
Because I get to see things differently.
Yeah.
And I think that's a unique gift. But when it comes to writing and even spelling, I have a little bit difficult time. So I wish I was really good at that, being a good writer. And I'm fortunate enough that my wife is a terrific writer. And so I actually lean on her a lot to help me craft certain memos or other things, just because it takes a little bit of time to write uh, write a dissertation. So she actually helped me through the dissertation a lot.
Wow.
And if it wasn't for technology where I can dictate into a computer and it types it out for me, I would be pretty lost. You know, if there wasn't spell checkers or grammar checkers, I would be really lost. And so I'm very thankful for assistive technology and things that can help someone who has a little bit of a difficulty with those things. But again, like I said, I appreciate my dyslexia more than I did when I was a child. And it helps really to see things differently. I think I can see things differently. But yeah, I would love to be a great writer, because I think that's a great way to communicate with other people is through writing.
What message would you put on all school marquees across the globe if you could do so for just one day?
I think what I'll put up there is love one another. I think there's not enough love in this world, and to share that would be awesome. Would be awesome. Can you imagine just people loving one another, caring for one another, helping one another out? You put aside everything else and just make sure that we focus on one another. I think it'll be great. And I hope students understand that even in this busy, crazy world, you have to make sure you take care of one another in the things that you do.
Well, Winston, congratulations. You've made it to the end of the show. You know this question was coming. You're building a school from the ground up. You're not limited by budget or resources. Your only limitation is your imagination. How would you build your dream school, and what would be your top three priorities?
Sure. I remember in 11th grade, I was in a business class, and that was actually one of our assignments to build a school. And so I remember writing down things that was pretty outside of the box. One is that I thought a school wouldn't have to have a physical location. And actually, it's just a meeting place that you come when you need to discuss certain things in person and face-to-face. I think a lot of things could be done, as we have seen, through technology, bringing in the best people all across the world. But, you know, if there was a physical location, can you imagine time-shifting and place-shifting people to have holograms of educators talking with students one-on-one? So I think one of the first things is, if you can build a dream school, it will be one-on-one, where you have someone that's caring enough to work with a child to help develop them. You have one person, one facilitator, one teacher that works with a child and allows them to do certain things. So I think that's the first one, is having personnel that cares for students, that personalizes it on a one-to-one level. I think that would be awesome. That would be awesome to have. We'd love to see that in all of our schools. Unfortunately, we don't have the resources for that. I think the second thing is making sure that you bring the outside in. So don't be indoors. I think the world is your classroom. And so, can you imagine students traveling all over the world, seeing different cultures, meeting different people, experiencing different events and places? That classroom is the classroom of the world would be a great thing for our students to experience. We get to do some of that virtually now. And I think that's a great thing that schools do, is share things virtually, you know, throughout the use of technology to share with other places and other people with our students. That's something that's I think very important. And I think the last one is that the school never ends. So can you imagine? You are born, you start school, and when you pass away, you end your school. There is no time limit to when school takes place. And that might be something that students would go, what? But when you think about it, we're lifelong learners, mm-hmm. if we are truly espousing lifelong learners, our school doesn't end. It continues on beyond just the time constraints of the day, the year, our life. And so school is continual, where you constantly are learning, constantly are growing, and there are those resources there to do that. So those are probably the three things that I'd like to see in the ultimate school that we could create.
Winston, mahalo. I really appreciate you being a part of the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast. Do you have any parting words of advice, and what's the best way to get a hold of you?
Parting words of advice. Listen to other people. Try to understand what they're saying. Try to adapt that to what's going on in your school. So a leader might have a great idea or a great thing that happens at their school. They might have great advice. It might not work in the place that you are, but something to kind of tuck away and to see, you know, and to analyze and to think about, you know, does that work? But listen to other people, gain as much experience from others as possible. And then, you know, make sure that you sift through all of that to make sure that you can apply it to your school. The best way to reach me is through Twitter at Winston Sakurai. You can also contact me on Facebook or email. But Winston Sakurai on Twitter is probably the best way. I'm on there. Love to connect with people. Love to hear, you know, what's going on in other parts of the world. Hawaii is a very isolated place. And through technology, I'm able to connect with great leaders like you, Danny, over time and space. And it's a wonderful thing to be able to do.
Well, better leaders, thank you for investing in yourself today by listening to this podcast. Remember that life's 10% of what happens to you and 90% of how you react to it. Go out there today and be a better leader. Today's podcast was brought to you by Daniel and Winston. Be better starting today by heading over to betterleadersbetterschools.com and type Winston in the search bar. The show notes page will pop up where you'll get the highlights of today's episode, links to all the resources, and the best way to connect. Winston, thank you so much again. Mahalo for sharing your leadership insights and helping the better leaders be better.
Mahalo, Danny.
Better leaders, just a few more things before you take off. If you enjoyed today's episode, make sure you subscribe, rate, and review the show. This helps gives the show some social proof, aka iTunes juice, and encourages new people to listen to the show. If you are a social media junkie, share your biggest takeaway from the show, and feel free to tag me on Twitter or Instagram. My handle is Alien Earbud, an anagram for my name, Daniel Bauer. Take the letters, switch them around, and create something interesting and new. That's how I got it. This Sunday is the weekend resource. Do you want to get a short email from me every Sunday where I share the best resources I have come across, links to interesting articles, books, blogs, and podcasts that have challenged my thinking, and a quote that's inspired me and will inspire you as well? If you'd like access to this resource, head over to betterleadersbetterschools.com and join the newsletter at the top of the page. Over 1,000 school leaders subscribe, and I think you'll benefit from it too. In the newsletter, I also share when a new blog or podcast comes out, as well as different opportunities to work with me. Thanks again for listening to the show.